Our comedy advice podcast.
An advice podcast for Death
and friends.
Make exaggerated statements not meant to be taken literally.
What was that, Seven?
Comedy advice podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Who you ask?
I've had meetings and interviews all day. I did a dinosaur birthday visit to this super cute older lesbian couple. I was like, this is the best morning.
Elaborate on the dinosaur part. What?
Oh, sorry. That wasn't just intuitive to understand. Like 4 years ago, I bought one of those inflatable T-Rex costumes and I love it. I keep it in the trunk of my car because I use it constantly. And with quarantine, I've been taking walks through my neighborhood as the dinosaur just to, you know, brighten things up. And then I'll visit some of my friends who have kids, you know, give them something to talk about. And they put me on the news and a couple of people reached out and were like, can we get the dinosaur to come by? So I surprised a lesbian couple on a, they were celebrating a birthday that morning, this morning.
Oh,
that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was so cool. It was so much fun. And I get like so much out of it and people do too. And I love that costume.
Those are my favorite costumes ever. I think I first saw them when I was living in New Jersey and we were at the beach and we saw three or four of those T-Rexes just flopping around walking on the beach. And then I saw your clip on the news and it brought me joy. Do you have a business that's coming out now? Like yeah. Dino Dash or something like that?
Actually, there's a dinosaur at your door.
Oh, that's a better name. Yeah, yeah. Door Dino or dinosaur at your door. I like that. Well, that's
So I go and I dance around, and if they're older, then I'll do like, I'll do some jokes for them too. it does get really hot in the costume, so I really can't stay for anyone longer than 30 minutes. I even have like a little fan in there, but longer than that, and it's just, then it's not fun for me anymore, and then it's not worth it.
Oh no. We'd hate to see
a premium rate kicks in.
Oh yeah. I'm like a lawyer. As soon as we hit that 30-minute mark, I'm like, okay, price per minute is going up.
Yeah, I'd hate to see a dehydrated dinosaur passed out on the sidewalk. That's never good news. All right, let's go ahead and get into it. Gotta clear the pipes. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Comedy Advice Podcast. My name is Stefan Satani, and I'm your host. Joining me today is my co-host, Eric Hughes.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. How are you, Eric?
Fantastic.
Love our banter. Oh, that's great. Me too. Okay, well, we've also got a very special guest. Samantha Bearman, her stage name is Sam Bear, founded and runs Bear Cave Comedy, is a contributing journalist for the Syndrome magazine, competed for Jimmy Kimmel's Funniest College Student in America, and has a beta fish named Francisco Diego, a black cat named Madame Cleo, and a dog named Gusto. She's based out of Santa Barbara and has lived in three different countries. Everybody, please applaud Ulu Late Get Naked for Sam Bear.
Hello.
Hey, it's nice to have you on the podcast.
Happy to be here. Something different to do.
Oh, that's awesome. I was going to ask, so how has it been for you as a comedian in quarantine? And what have you been doing to keep flexing that comedy muscle?
Yeah, let me tell you, it's been challenging at first, you know, lack of performance space, definitely. But especially as a producer, I had probably one of my biggest shows to date was right in the throes of, you know, it just was never going to happen with how much things got shut down. So I had to just kind of pivot. And I did start taking on slowly some requests for me to like pop in as a guest to different people's shows and do a few minutes here and there. And the thing is, once you let go of the experience being what you thought, what a live experience is, and adjust your, what you get from it, it can still be really fulfilling. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to continue on with Bear Cave Comedy. And I've been able to produce several really successful virtual shows. And now we're expanding into doing fundraising shows as well. So I've just continued threading it through, and I have dedicated a lot more time and energy to posting comedy stuff on Instagram because I had the time. So I even dabbled in cosplay twice. So that was fun.
Oh. What'd you dress up as?
Mrs. Hannigan from Annie, where she's drinking like vodka or something. And so I like recreated that. She's like pouring vodka or gin into a cup, and I recreated that pouring apple cider vinegar into a margarita glass. So I do like a loose cosplay. And then I also did Penny from The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay.
Where she goes down like playing video games online. And I was there much earlier into quarantine than I thought I would be. Like, we were looking very similar. Like Cheetos. And anyway.
That's awesome. Good. And I was going to ask, I know you mentioned that you do produce shows, you do stand up, you did improv. I was going to try and bring it back, tinkle, yep, tinkle, tinkle, flashback. But how did you get into comedy in the first place? Tell us your adventure.
Yeah. Honestly, I think people always want some like big tragic story, or I'm like overcoming so much. I had a very good childhood and a strong family. And honestly, I just heard my whole life, you're so funny. Oh my God, you should totally be a comedian. Oh my God. What I heard more than that was, what are you quoting? What movie is that from? I understand. Did you make that up? Oh my God, you made that up?
Was that your dad?
Yeah, it's my dad. That's actually my brother. Nice. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I just felt a lot of support. And to be honest, I felt I had a lot of good timing, and I was prattling off things that were making people laugh. So how did I get into it? A little bit of a ham. I do love the attention, and I do love being able to get people to laugh. It feels so exciting. And so, you know, I tested out the waters. Definitely was not welcome in the vibe in high school, but in college, the improv team, I got onto that, and after that it was like no looking back.
Wow. And then I was gonna ask, were you in Kentucky at that time? Because I know you did your master's in Kentucky.
I did, yeah. Oh no, I went to college at San Diego State, so I was on the college improv team there.
Oh, okay. And okay,
yes. And then when I went to graduate school, I joined the Extra Crispy. That's the Lexington, City of Lexington improv team. Yeah, an homage, nice, to the chicken. And I loved that team. I had so much fun. We had great shows. And then when I moved back to California, I just wasn't able to find that kind of, the kind of team that I wanted out here that had shows on a regular basis that were all at kind of a higher performance level. And I think anyone can do improv, but also when you, I think, reach different levels, you want other people around to be able to push you, sure, just artistically. And I made a vision board. And you know what? I'm a girl. I made a vision board, and I wanted to do stand-up. And so I did it. I signed up for a writing class, I think. I needed to put money down on it. I know a lot of people just go open mics, and that's much, much more cost effective. But I'm very type A, and I figure if I'm going to spend money to write, I'm going to show up and do it then. And I did.
That's kind of what Eric and I did, where how we got into comedy too, was we did a class. Yep.
Okay.
So you did compete for Jimmy Kimmel's Funniest College Student in America. Had you started stand up there? I'm not sure how the competition worked. Yeah.
So I will tell you, I was actually helping to produce that show when I was in college. San Diego State, and I was on the event board for the entire university. I didn't know that the board I was on was so difficult to get into in college. I also didn't know how the important things to be handling. It was one of the best circumstances of being too young and too naive to realize how much was on the line. So I was so calm in my interview because I was like, whatever. So anyway, I'd been on this board for a year, and the Jimmy Kimmel Show had picked our school. So I wasn't even supposed to be on the lineup. And I had done that strategically because I was 19 and terrified, and they didn't have enough female comedians. And my boss said, well, I put your name on the list, so you better think of something funny to say, because you're doing this. Like, it wasn't a question. It was, this is what you're doing tonight. And so I was really terrified. And I actually had the worst and one of the better experiences. A comic was there who was much older and much more talented. Like, he didn't need to be aggressive. He when you know that you're one of the more talented people in the room, you don't need to go up and find someone who's very new and tell them, like, hey, you're new at this. Like, people who are new know. He walked right up to me and he was like, so how long have you been at this? And I said, you know, I'm really, really fresh. I was real excited. And he's like, well, I hope you don't suck up there. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, why?
What?
I was like, I don't even want to win right now. But I was not going to let him see me sweat. And so I, like, whatever, and walked away. And I got really nervous, most nervous I've ever gotten. Right. But this man is, I'm like, what? Do you feel good about yourself?
Oh my God.
So very close to me going on, he said, I just wanted to tell you one more thing. And I was like, I don't know what else you could tell me that could be any better than what you've already said. He said, I want you to know that you wouldn't be here if you didn't know somewhere inside you that you're funny. And he said, the audience knows they have a job and their job is to laugh and they want to laugh. He's like, remember that. And I did make them laugh. And my, like, I'll get off, but my Cinderella story is an actual, like, producer from the Jimmy Kimmel Show was there, and he came up to me after, and, like, no one knew that was my first show. He came up to me after everything was said and done and said, I want you to know you've got something here and you are very talented and you're very good at what you're doing.
That's awesome.
And wow. I almost passed out. Like, a lot of emotions have happened tonight. I guess I would be, I don't want to comparative to Amy Schumer, but I was plucked and put on stage. I didn't audition. I was just, my boss was like, you're a woman and you're funny, you should go on stage. I was like, affirmative action, thank you.
Yeah, right. And so it seems like you've been doing stand-up for about 2 years, right?
Yeah, really actively for 2 years. I'd say when I was 19, that's what really jettisoned me into improv. I felt like I had that comedic grace or whatnot. But yeah, the last 2 years, I've really been dedicating more of my time to stand-up.
That's awesome. And then producing shows as well. And then I know that we connected because you had started to do shows here in Arizona too. So have you been doing shows in the Santa Barbara area and a little bit in Arizona and other places that you're traveling to? What's your course been that you've been traversing for doing stand-up?
Right. Definitely being in Santa Barbara, I'm within a drive to LA. So I've primarily been performing up and down the West Coast. And when we connected, I just had finished my first Midwest tour, as it were, through Arizona, New Mexico. And actually right now, I was supposed to be back in Arizona doing a second tour, and that got shut down.
Yeah.
Not to bring up what we all know is going on, but that got shut down. So primarily I've been more West Coast based. But I was also supposed to go out to Canada and perform for a couple of days out in Montreal.
Wow.
And yeah, I try really hard if I don't have something set up when I'm traveling, and I travel a lot, to make every effort to coordinate a show. And I will say, fortunate, lucky, whatever you want to say. I mean, I work hard to find those connections. So I try and always perform wherever I go.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast that you were on, and you were saying something along the lines of, if you do get 200 no's but 2 yeses, people aren't really going to look at the no's, they're looking at the yeses. So I think that really embodies the work ethic that I feel like you've been able to put in with these tours that you've created and we're going to do in Canada. And so that's really awesome. I was going to ask, to that point, has it been difficult? I thought I heard that you were saying that it's more difficult than you thought it would be to kind of set up shows and be able to do this type of thing. But what has it been like trying to make these tours, book shows, get your name out there?
It's, again, I think it's just changing what I think it's supposed to look like and adjusting to the current climate that we're in. I mean, there's been so many incredible opportunities that have come out of this. Like, I've done shows and I've been able to have headliners who were in other countries because all they have to do is turn on their computer and they're right in the show and able to perform. So those have been really good. And I think the difficult thing was more that audience. I'm a big riffer. I love engaging with the audience and getting that kind of give and take back and commenting on things. And I realize I still can do that, but it is different. And just accepting it's different and adjusting, I think, as a performer and someone who takes it professionally, that's a muscle in the game. You've got to learn how to adapt what you're doing to the circumstances that you're in. And then in terms of booking, right now, I think because even though we're open as a country, everyone is like, this is my definition of open. And so different clubs are booking. I know that Arizona is opening up a bit more when it comes to that. And I think it's just on a personal level, everyone is deciding for themselves, like, at what point do you take a spot to go into a new space, to be around items and people and things you're not used to. So I'm just taking it day by day and I'm sending out my avails. And I think I'm trying very hard in this moment not to put the cart before the horse, as it were, and deciding as opportunities present themselves. But I've been able to do so many more interviews and podcasts. And I was just spotlighted by the Native Society as one of their comics of the day. All of these were from internet connections that were really revved up during this time. So,
Yeah, we've been able to take advantage of that too, where we've been able to have some guests that are releasing some episodes this week, actually, where I don't know if we would have gotten them if Corona hadn't and the situation hadn't unfolded like it has. But one silver lining is we had Brad Williams on last week. His episode's launching tomorrow. And he was telling us, he's like, you know, if someone doesn't do your podcast, they probably really don't like you because they've got a lot of time now. They're able to do things. Yeah. Comedy club shut down.
Exactly.
So
time to take it personally.
Yeah. Yes.
I've been hearing if someone doesn't text you back now, like they don't like you. They're not. They watch the text come in and they're like, nah, I'm good.
Take personal offense to it. Cause yeah, that is mean. But I was also going to ask too, I have seen a couple bits of your stand up and it is hilarious. I was also going to ask about your family. Cause it seems like they are very supportive. I heard they were out in one of the bits and your dad, I heard is the number one cannabis expert in the country and number two in the world.
Yep.
I mean, I Googled him and in my mind, I was thinking really long hair, very high all the time, but it seemed like quite the opposite. Very little hair, very professional. And he has a lot of resources out there about cannabis and how it affects metabolism and a lot of other things like that. How is it like growing up with one of the leading experts in the world on cannabis?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I forget that, like, to so many people, he really is a celebrity. He's on Netflix. He's been on Netflix 4 times. I mean, I'm literally just trying to, like, get on his level. So not that Netflix is the metric, but, like, if it counts in some metric base, he's leaps and bounds. So he literally, he's like, call me when you're on Netflix. I'm like, thanks, Dad.
Oh my God.
He's super supportive.
Put your stand up right behind him as he's giving the interview or something like that. Like sneak it in.
Yeah. We actually are teaming up because he does talks around the world of me being his opener for these incredible conferences with like 3,000 people. So,
wow.
Hey, 2-for-1 bear special.
Wow.
But honestly, I've always described him as like a really hardworking hippie. Not that hippies aren't hardworking, but I think like that image you're thinking of, like the long hair, the like.
Right.
He's literally probably the hardest working human I know, and he cares so much for people. It really would pain him when he would raise his prices in his private practice because he's a healer, I think, first and foremost. And people ask, like, how do you know he's the number one expert? And I said, okay, well, because the literal number one expert in the world, Dr. Mashulam, who isolated THC, said Dr. David Behrman's number two. And I'm like, I don't know how you get a better reference than the unequivocal expert of the world saying, and this guy's number two. And he said the only reason he's number two is because I'm still alive.
God damn.
I'm not giving up Frank. But my dad always had a really open discussion with like drug education, I suppose. But I mean, my house was not an opium den. Like, let me be really clear. I never walked through just like big puffs of smoke or anything of that.
Did you end up correcting your friends when they're smoking, like the bong's on backwards or
on backwards?
I'm such a bad representation of that aspect of my family. I'm definitely the black sheep when it comes to those things. I'm like, don't ask me questions about that. I will say in high school, that was when I was in high school, not him. That's when his practice really started making a concerted shift to cannabis medicine. And I overheard all the stoners in my photography class. They were talking about like where to go to get recommendations because I were starting. And they kept looking at me, and I know they were going to talk about my dad. And all of a sudden I hear them say, what about Behrman? And this girl goes, nah, don't go to Behrman. And they said, why? And he asked for papers. You don't want to go there. And I told my dad that, and papers, that means like you need a medical records. You need a history. He's not a Venice Beach yes man. I mean, he is a healer, but he's like, let's talk about this. Like, so you have headaches. How long have you had headaches? How often do you have headaches? How many years have you? I mean, he's going to ask you questions. Show me documentation. And I told him that, and he loved that story. He tells it. He still tells it constantly. He's like, that's right. I want the stoners to know Behrman needs papers. So I love him. He's great. And he's the best dad plant in the audience. I tell comics at any of my shows, whether I'm producing or performing, I'm like, if you need to talk to someone in the audience, you can pick on my dad. I go, and he's deaf, which also makes it even funnier. Like, it's great.
I was going to ask too about that, because I know some of your set, you were talking about just a massive amount, a quantity of dick pics that you and your roommate were getting, or friend. How does he feel about that when you talk about that type of stuff?
He thinks it's funny. I mean, my parents know who they raised. I'm very close with my family, and I don't think they're shocked about what I'm talking about. He hasn't really asked me to go into much depth about that.
He hasn't asked for more details.
He has asked, like, well, how? But I'm never afraid to talk about that in front of him. He used to teach a human sexuality class. Like, the man knows what penises are, but he's not afraid. Yeah, my parents they're just beyond cool. Like, nothing shakes them. He doesn't ask many questions about that. I think he said, like, do you really have that many saved on your phone? And I said, no, Dad, that's why I started my website, dicksidentaskfor.com.
Oh, my God.
That would get traffic.
Yeah, seriously.
It does.
God. And I was gonna ask about that too. I mean, does that really happen? Because from the perspective of a married man, a wholesome married man,
you all are.
It's hard to think of sending dick pics. I mean, I send dick pics to my wife, but they're very cute and tasteful. They've got little hats on them and things like that.
Oh,
but,
no.
But like, see, that's the difference. And I talk about that. I'm just tired of the under dick, or where is the under dick? Like, I'm tired of just the same unfluffed penis. Put a little hat on it, maybe smack some glitter. And I'm not going to say that I'm going to like succumb to your whims, but I will respond with at least like, good effort. You know, women, we take hours and hours to take a selfie with the caption, like, feeling cute, might delete later. Just put half as much effort into a dick pic. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with you. I feel like you guys do so much. Us, if we take a picture and it looks like The Rock in Jumanji, you just got to change it up. It's got to be like little trim, little, I don't know, glitter. I like glitter. That's a good suggestion too.
Yeah. Glitter hat. Makes everything look better. I actually don't have, I'll tell you the truth. I don't have so many dick pics because I think I don't know in the history of sending them, have they ever worked, but I find it very gross. But it's really my friends and I, we will troll each other with like with dick pics that we were sent. And it's equal parts hilarious and terrifying.
You could probably get them to stop if you just send back a different dick pic.
Oh no, then they see it as a challenge. To stop, I don't want to engage. I don't encourage that behavior.
You don't negotiate with terrorists. That's just the way it works. Yeah, I feel like they send one.
Yeah, no.
That's crazy. It just makes me think too, because I've never been exposed to that, obviously, as a straight male, but leaning over to comedy too, are there any things where being a comedian and being a woman, it sounds like, I don't know if it was a gender thing or just that guy being a dick at that Jimmy Kimmel's competition where it's like, oh, you're new, huh? But have you gotten any feelings of male comics that have been negative towards female comics?
Yeah. I make a joke about this, but ever since I started living my life with the confidence of a middle-aged white man, I've stopped apologizing. And it's really, well, I was in a comedy competition and it was, I mean, it was really good. Like it was a talent everywhere, just so much talent that I thought, I don't know who's going to make it through. Everyone was just different and unique, but I made it through to another round and I saw that there was only one other woman who'd made it through. And I walked up to her and in the next round, it was going to be only like two people were going to make it out of 25. It was down to two. And I said, you know, for one of us to make it, both of us have to be better than everyone. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I plan on being better than everyone. And I hope you do too. And she's like, absolutely. But I don't think that men have that conversation, that they have to think about that. And I knew for one of us to go on, we had to be better than every single person. And I feel like, it's interesting to me because men are like, oh my God, I can't believe you're going to talk about penises. They're like, oh, you're going to talk about your period. Like, I'm sorry. You're talking about who you hooked up with based on a dating app, and you're talking about your terrible relationship with your mother, and we're spending another 5 minutes where you literally crucify women who take a photo at a good angle, and suddenly you feel like you've been catfished. Like, you know what, Brian, you live in your mom's basement and you haven't had a full-time job in 3 years. Why don't you like look in the mirror for a second?
The only thing that's more frequent than dick pics is probably dick jokes too from male comics. So I think that's very commonplace. And yes. So them to be able to complain that a woman is making jokes about the dick pic she gets or her period or anything like that is, I think, completely hypocritical.
Yeah, I'll hear like, oh my God, like that's gross. I'm like, yeah, well, you're disgusting. And you have the mic for 15 minutes. Like, and it's also, I mean, if you don't like it, you don't need to listen. That's for any comic, for anything happening. If you don't, if you're not entertained, then walk away. Then you're not my audience. It's okay. I do feel that like men try and put women in positions where we have to somehow justify our existence of being there, why we deserve time on the stage. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot in a lot of shows where it's usually four white men and one person of color or a woman. So I started marketing myself as I am a woman of color and a comedian, two birds with one stone. And it's sad how well that marketing tactic works.
We had Jill Kimmel on. Her episode just launched today. And she was talking about being a comic and a woman. And she was using it to her advantage to the point where she would call clubs and she would say, hey, you've had nothing. You've booked nothing but male comics for the last 2 months. And they're like, oh, well, when are you available? We can get you in on this date. And so I think that's fantastic that she and you and have been able to take advantage of that.
That's literally what I do. I'll pull up and send them back their own flyers and say, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. That's awesome. But
it's not to say Caucasian people aren't funny, but like,
We're not.
Five different white guys are going to talk about like what it's like to be white in America. Ah! You know, their saddest thing is like, I didn't have enough money for lunch, so I just stole food.
That's like 5 minutes of me. Yeah, that's my
put
material.
It in my backpack. Yeah.
Damn. Oh, you read me like a book. Well, Sam, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we dive into the self-help portion?
Well, I'll do just a plug. I'll plug now, I'll plug later.
Oh, you can do both. Yeah, we have a designated plug spot, but you can plug wherever. We've got holes everywhere, so just feel free to plug away.
Yeah, confidence of a middle-aged white man. I'm going to do it when I want to do it, and I want to do it right now.
There you go.
At the end. So go ahead, visit my website, SamanthaBearman.com. Find me on Instagram or TikTok, Sam Bear Comedy. And if you want to explain TikTok to me, that would be great. So if you want to, like, you can slide into my DM. And if you saw my Google history right now, it is the definition of someone who probably shouldn't be on TikTok. I was like, how do you duet on TikTok? And I literally thought, why? And do I have this app if I have to Google how to do this?
I had to look it up.
I guess what I wanted to share with your audience is that I shouldn't have a TikTok.
No, you know what, audience? Well, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. And audience, if you guys want to follow Sam and then DM her how to use TikTok, that would be great, because I don't know how to do it. We ended up having a guest. I think he's got 500,000 followers on TikTok. He's crushing it. Ben Polizzi. Benedict Polizzi, I think, is his handle. But he does good stuff. He also makes faces. So maybe that's it. Just make a face.
If I just made a face, people would say I was just being dramatic. Having emotions.
Well, thank you for the plugs. We're going to go ahead and get into the self-help portion of the podcast. Now, we like to get fueled with an inspirational quote to lead us into all these questions. But before we do with an inspirational quote, we like to ask our guests if they have any motivational quotes that help get them and fuel them through their dark days. Do you have anything? Well, it doesn't have to be that dark, but do you have any inspirational quotes that you like to say to yourself, tell yourself in front of the mirror, tattoo?
Be afraid, but do it anyway. All right. You know, if you're afraid, do it anyway. That's like an actual motivational one.
I like that.
And then when life gives you lemons, you're probably out of tequila. That's more aspirational than inspirational.
I like both of those.
And I guess the last one, it's like, you never know what can happen if you ask. If someone says no, you're in the exact same spot as if you hadn't asked.
Really, really like that one. And when I'm doing outreach and looking for guests, it is a little intimidating, especially for bigger guests. But my wife, she's like, you already have a no, so the best you can get is a yes. And so that helps me. So I tattooed it on my chest is what I'm trying to say. Anyway, we've got a inspirational quote from not a person, but a robot. Specifically, his name is, or her name is, Inspirobot, and it's an AI machine that takes some of the wisest words known to man, smacks them together, and leaves us with a juicy motivational quote. And then what we're going to do is we're going to try and find out what it means, because obviously there's meaning in it. So,
okay.
Eric, would you like to read this week's quote from Inspirobot?
You got it. Long live the sexy. For they will someday inherit the farm.
All right. I feel like there was some biblical scripture there. And then, I don't know, farm stuff. So that was good. So Eric, as you were reading it, did anything resonate with you? Did you feel screams of wisdom penetrating your eardrums?
It was very, very National Geographic, and you know, the farm represents the earth, and long live the sexy, just kind of, you know, an attractive bird's going to be the one that gets the mate, right? And so its progeny will inherit the farm.
Wow. That's actually pretty good. Eric was able to make that one work. That's great.
What doesn't make sense is the photo that it's plastered over. It's like a, gosh, what the hell is that? It looks like a ghost lady walking out into the surf, but then there's like a planet crashing down.
Oh, I thought it was a goddess, a deity, Mother Earth, maybe. And the light that's in her hands is all the sexy, and then the clouds is all the farms that they're going to inherit. growing up on a farm, I can tell you that there are not a lot of sexy people there. It's a lot of relatives too. So, I mean, some people get down with that in Cottonwood, Arizona, but not I. I did move to the bigger city of Phoenix. But also, long live the sexy. I feel like the longer you live, maybe the sexiness goes down. So maybe it's saying that someday they're going to realize if you're super sexy, maybe the wisdom or the naivete is there, but then the longer you live, the wiser you become. And then once that farm becomes available, then it's yours. You've inherited it, you sexy. So maybe that's what InspireBot's trying to say.
Maybe.
Sam, what are your thoughts here?
God, nowhere near as ethereal as either of yours. Maybe you two are still... I feel like you guys are like on a Christian dating site right now, and you're just trying to prove how religious you are. Like, even I know you're married, but like, is your wife like, I don't think you pray to Jesus enough. In my mind, that's how she sounds, and this is your like justification. I don't know.
That is
like,
the Brazilian accent. Yeah.
Oh my God, Brazilian? I'm Hispanic. Good luck. You are a strong man. Wow. We are a lot to handle. I'll say, like, side note, when I see memes, not all of them, but like memes that are like, you're like a man or woman dating a Hispanic Latina, like, oh, you need a vacation. But don't take one without her. Like, it's true. I send them to my...
I will say it is true. I feel like she's very sweet. She does have a sting to her. I feel like Jonathan Coyote or Coyote Peterson one day is going to hold out his arm, and then a Brazilian wife is going to slap it, and he's going to hurt worse than murder hornets. But she is an absolute treasure. I'm going to bleep all that part out. She's an absolute treasure.
I get it.
And I wouldn't live without her.
Okay, the power we of get editing. It. She's clearly watching you right now. Good job, smart man. So what I think, what I think the quote means, I don't know. I honestly stopped listening after like something about the sexy. I was like, that sounds right. So that's. And then my family has owned a farm for over 100 years. So I also understand, like, I don't want to inherit the farm. That's a lot of work. But so I want to counter that. Maybe it's not motivational, and maybe it's like quasi-punishmental, like foreshadowing, you know, because oftentimes lots of sexies, not this sexy, but other sexies, they don't know what hard work is. And it's like, all right, you get your sexy, you keep it, but eventually your sexy ass is going to have to work on a farm.
Oh my God. Yeah, that might be it. Wow.
Yeah.
The smarter sexies or the uggos are going to be managing the farm from afar while the sexies are plowing plowing and reaping the seeds and stuff. I don't know the vernacular of a farmhand, even though I lived there for 22 years.
Were you paying attention?
You grew up on a farm. Like,
he did.
Just full of lies?
I mean,
do you call like living in a white middle class neighborhood the farm? Like, oh, I have no idea.
It wasn't exactly Phoenix proper. It was like North Phoenix, so we called it the farm. No, I just it was a dairy farm, so we did not do much plowing. We did more milking.
Milking?
Yep. Why'd
you say it like that?
I don't know. I don't know why I said it like that. I just feel
all that nut juice.
It was all right. Well, hey, I feel like we feel really motivated from this quote, so I think we can move on. What do you guys say?
I feel like ready to move on from the quote. That's how I feel.
Well, we're done.
All right. We're gonna dive into our first question. This is found by our fan Caleb. Thank you, Caleb. It says, help on a child obsessed with landmarks. Hi. My godson's fifth birthday is coming up, and I know he's obsessed with landmarks like Big Ben and Christ the Redeemer. I've been struggling to find something that I could get him as a gift relating to that. He already has 3D puzzles that his parents helped him with. Sorry if this isn't the right group for this, wasn't sure. Thank you in advance. Sincerely, yeah. Phil. So guys, we've got a dilemma on our hands. A five-year-old obsessed with landmarks wants a gift related to landmarks. Do you guys have any? Are you guys obsessed with landmarks by any chance? No. I'm getting the look now.
It's a weird way to put it.
Sorry. Do you guys?
This is going to be one of those kids who you're like, you've got weird tastes. I hope you turn out attractive looking.
So you get on the farm when you're older. But this is what I'm thinking. Maybe.
Gifts.
Wait, what was that? Gifts. Sorry, you cut out.
I just was letting you talk. That's the rare occurrence of a Latin woman giving you space to say some truth. That's what that was.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm going to cherish it. And then I'll keep talking. So maybe I'm thinking that you could get a piece of Mount Rushmore or like a piece of dirt. And then give it to them. It sounds bad as I finish the sentence, but.
Yeah. Okay. No, this is a great building point because actually people don't have a lot of money right now. So here's what you do. And kids are gullible and they believe adults, which can also be dangerous. So what you're going to do is you're going to collect a lot of different flavors of dirt. Now, I don't mean flavors like taste, but I mean texturally. Different flavors of dirt. You're going to put them in different jars and you're going to say that that's the Mount Rushmore dirt. Ooh. That's the, you know, White House dirt. That's a landmark.
The White House dirt.
The White House dirt would actually just be documents. Like, that's real dirt.
Yeah. That's good.
It would be all the redacted.
It's just that's shredded. The White House dirt.
Oh, great advice with a great joke. Oh, God, I love that. I think that if I was a five-year-old obsessed with landmarks, that would be a great gift for me. I would probably keep that until I'm about 25 years old, and then my uncle says, I'm sorry, that's not real. That was like the farm dirt from North Phoenix.
From the backyard.
But
throw in like broken gravel from the house that's being like bulldozed over. Like, yeah. That's your piece of Mount Rushmore. There it is. And kids are going to ask questions. They're not even going to wonder how, in the span of a week, you got all these. It's just like, yeah. I did it.
You just say eBay. Like,
you didn't even travel there. You just got it online. I love it.
Sample number 5 came out of an urn.
Oh no. So, Eric, what about you? What are you thinking for gifts for this freak?
Come on, give the kid a break. I feel like I could relate a little bit. I've wanted, like, when I'm out on, if I've been somewhere that has a landmark, you're going to be like, if you're in London, you might want to see Big Ben, right? Right? I've gone well out of my way, and by me, I mean I've forced my family to go well out of their way to go see Stonehenge while we were in the UK. Did you go to Stonehenge?
Yes!
It's in the middle of nowhere, on a farm! It's on a farm!
Yep.
And you're just driving and driving and driving and driving, and then out of nowhere, it's like...
There it is.
History.
Was it everything that you had imagined it would be?
It had a gift shop, which was weird.
I bought something from the gift shop, which was
I got a poster of Stonehenge. So kind of like with this kid.
Wow.
He's obsessed with landmarks.
Yeah, I guess we're making fun of him, but both of us bought something from the
Stonehenge gift shop. I feel bad now. Okay, what are we sorry, not? Guys. I didn't realize. Okay. But go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
But I didn't bring dirt back from it. So like...
No, that shit was locked down. You couldn't even walk up to it when I went, at least.
Yeah, same. Because people were touching it and taking chunks
for their home. For their nephews.
For their birthday.
Yeah. They're like, I know a kid that's going to love this.
just
taking whole stones from there. Jesus, those animals.
You know what this makes me think of too is those like Statue of Liberty lighters. It looks like a little statue, but there you can. It's got the button. So he's five. Give him some fire. He's a
that
pyro.
Was from George of the Jungle, right? Or what was that? There was like a remake. It was in the 90s.
Oh,
with Brendan Fraser.
Yes, and he has to bring fire like back to his, like the kid has to bring it. And so he climbs up the Statue of Liberty and he's like, it's not even real fire. And then he gives him the lighter. And
was that Jungle to Jungle?
That's Jungle to Jungle with
Tim Allen?
Allen.
Jungle to Jungle. I think it's George of the Jungle. We were all wrong and all a little right.
It's
Jungle to Jungle. No, you were right. I take it back. I didn't hear you. You're right.
It's all within the Jungle cinematic universe. So I think there's a crossover at some point.
Oh my God. And I get it now. It was like a concrete jungle to an actual jungle. That's
by the way, it made me remember my wife. She used to work in the Empire State Building, and so I went over. They had a gift exchange, and so her and her team were giving each other gifts. They were extremely thoughtful gifts. My wife and I helped pick out this gift for a coworker, and then it's my wife's turn to get her gift from the Secret Santa or whatever gift exchange, and then she opens it, and it's a bottle opener in the shape of the Empire State Building, which somebody had obviously gone down to the lobby, bought for $5, and then wrapped up. And so,
do you still have it?
Yeah, we do. Works great.
There you go.
Great memento.
Worth the $5?
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, best gift of the whole thing is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, we had a gift exchange like that at my work because obviously places of business don't get creative, and my roommate wanted to come because it was like a huge dinner and it was fun, and I said sure. She's like, I want to play the game. I said, well, you need a gift. She goes, I don't have time. I go, don't worry, I got you covered. So I put in a fun white elephant type of gift. I put some effort in hers. I didn't have time to go do anything, so I knew where like our supply cabinet was. And we had an old coffee maker that I didn't even know if it worked. So I pulled it out of there and then I wrapped it in paper bags because I couldn't find anything. The only tape I could find was duct tape. I mean, this thing looked like garbage.
Oh my God.
And the person who get it, they said, oh, I love when people do this. They put a really nice gift in really bad wrapping. And I was like, not always.
Oh, my God.
The worst part, I didn't even look to see if it had been cleaned. And apparently,
there's still a fresh pot. There's an old pot of coffee in there.
Yeah, it's dripping.
Oh, God. That's beautiful. Well, good. Okay. Well, I feel like we've got
really
a couple
good at gift questions. Anything else?
I feel like we nailed it. We got dirt. We've got a bottle opener.
I like the dirt idea.
And yeah, I think we've covered it. So we're going to move on to the next question. This is from our fan, Rob. Thank you, Rob. My friend/crush is scared of the dark and is just fearful a lot. I don't know if she has anxiety or what, but I want to help her. I tried asking her why she was scared of the dark, and she said because someone could pop up out of nowhere and attack her. Ooh. For example, in her house, a thief might show up, she told me. I just want to know what to tell her and how to make her feel safe. Sincerely, are you afraid of the dark? Because you shouldn't be. Okay. Well, I think this person has a very legitimate fear of being of the dark. I don't know. I don't know if you should say anything. You should just be like, well, you should be afraid of the dark because a thief could come at any time and steal all your shit.
I'm gonna have to disagree. I would do aversion therapy. What you're going to do, you're going to want to get her some of the Hulk gloves.
Okay.
So that she's prepared. And then you're going to want to hide in her closet. Then you're going to want to cut the power to her house. So it goes... pitch black.
Wait, what? Does she have the Hulk hands on?
You're going to want to jump out at her. Yes, yeah, she has Hulk hands on so that she feels empowered to, you know, tackle anything that might jump out at her.
I feel like you're going to have to think about this one a little more in detail, too, though, because Hulk hands don't have opposable thumbs. So she's literally going to have to smash the doors open if she needs to get inside, outside. So she's literally going to channel her inner Hulk or Hulkette. But I like it. I like it.
I didn't think about the thumb aspect or that she would maybe want to, like, get out.
She's not going to be able to open the fridge. She's going to have to punch the fridge open. God.
Just burst through a window.
But the more I think about it, the more genius this idea is, because she's not going to be afraid of anything after she gets empowered to be able to just blast the shit out of any surface that she sees. So good.
Yeah. That's my answer. I'm sticking to it.
Best answer. Like the dirt and that, I think, are great answers here. So this is great. Now, Eric, what about you? Have you been afraid of the dark or any such thing? How have you gotten over these fears?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. There's a certain time of night that I won't take the trash out. We'll say that much. I think it's less of a, you're not actually afraid of the dark. It sounds like she's actually afraid that she's not actually alone. Mm. Is it the dark?
It's weird because women are always afraid that we're going to be alone. So it sounds like maybe she's getting what she wanted. She doesn't want to be alone, and she's afraid that she's not alone.
It's like being afraid of success.
So
when you're really successful, yeah.
So maybe what if she gave a name to the imaginary thief? And so that way, if you put a name to like an animal, you feel bad if you kill it because you grow emotions to it. I learned that on the farm, by the way. But maybe she can give a name.
While you were eating your steak?
you made sure to name every cow, didn't you?
Yes.
Like, Bessie tastes good.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Who do you want to eat tonight? Do you want
Cletus or Rufus?
Carl, do you want Vicky? Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's what's on the menu. Like, just names.
Oh, no. It makes me feel bad.
You can either have milk and cereal or steak and eggs. One or the other.
Yeah, my mom used to say chicken makes a contribution. The pig makes a commitment.
Oh shit. Oh, because she did she live on the farm?
Yeah, my family's owned a farm for over 100 years.
Fuck. She said that.
Wow. Is that like on your family crest? I like
I'm
that.
The she.
That's really good.
You joke, but actually when our country turned 100, and I'm not even gonna get into the logistics of that, but when our country turned 100, the government went out and like put out this application process and picked two. You had to be able to prove that your business or farm or something had been only in your family for 100 years. And they picked two places from every state. So 100 places, and my family's farm was picked. So there is actually a huge sign outside my family's farm that says this is an official century farm.
That's awesome.
And then the next year we sold it. I'm just kidding. We didn't. We sold
it. really drove the price up.
Did it? Yeah. Did you guys get the official Twitter badge too, and Instagram?
There is an official sign.
Shit. What type of farm is it, by the way? I didn't even... I'm so sorry. Farmer to farmer, I forgot to ask.
It's a pot farm.
It's a sheep farm.
Aww. So
they move in Colorado. Yep, they bring up several hundred, probably to 1,000 head of sheep up to the Continental Divide every summer. And then they bring them back down.
Wow. That sounds strenuous.
You guys shear them? You guys, is it for the wool? You guys collect the wool?
I mean, I'm being given a lot more credit for this. I live in California. I am not involved in the farming per se. When I'm like, my family's on the farm, that's like one of the, you know, Jeff Bezos's kid saying like, I'm rich. Like, I mean, yeah, but like you didn't do anything. Bezos barely did anything either. So like, I don't know if they'll listen to this, but listen, they live on a farm. I could go missing and no one would find me. Like the farm's big. But yes, my family shears the sheep. They sell the sheep. They trade the sheep. It's, I know we don't want to talk about this, but it's kind of cool. Like farm law. I mean, when people will do favors for each other, they really will barter in like, okay, well, I have, you know, 15 geese I can give you, or I'll trade you like a head of cattle. That, I mean, that's currency. That's $500 and up. So, I mean, you could really pay off a debt with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
God.
I can't, but they could.
Yes.
Bringing a cow over.
Farmers.
Paying for my tuition. Here you go. Couple of cows.
Oh, God. That's how I got into
this
ASU.
This cow's only got three legs.
Oh, Eileen. My
Do you guys, well, I am embarrassed to admit this, but no shame. So I did in high school try to go cow tipping on my own farm. And then I realized that you can't tip them. They don't work like that. Did you guys know
they're
that?
Too big.
They don't even sleep standing up. They lay down comfortably. Sometimes they cuddle.
Oh,
so is cow tipping an urban legend?
Tis.
Yeah.
Tis.
I think it was because the rumor was that they sleep standing up. So clearly you could sneak them up them and tip them.
And right. Not get kicked.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
To be fair, I heard this urban legend. I never even questioned the kicking part. I just assumed like, oh, when they're falling, they're just going to accept their fate. And that's it.
I just fall
like
your
beef
plank.
Tenderized.
Oh, God.
Just a bunch of bulldozers.
All right. Any other tips for getting over fears of the dark or being alone? No. We nailed it.
Sleep if the light's on.
All the time.
Yeah. What? Question mark, why aren't you falling asleep to Netflix like everyone else who's afraid of the dark?
There you go.
I don't
but on some forensic files, your brain will just absorb the murder and then you'll be chill.
You won't have any night. So you'll be able to be afraid in your sleep as well as in your conscious state. That's great. Good. It's like headspace for the frantically fucking afraid. Good. So I think that's it, guys. We have reached the end of our show. Sam, thank you so much for joining. This is another hole where you can plug. So where can people find you? What have you got going on? Tell us everything about you that we can put in the show notes.
That's great. Ready to plug. So I do have two upcoming shows for the month of June, and both of them are going to be fundraisers. They are virtual shows. So you can tune in anywhere from the farm, from under the relentless rule of your Brazilian wife, like wherever you're tuning in from, we are available to you. You can find us Bear Cave Comedy. The first show is on June 11th at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that show is going to be fundraising for the Food Bank of Santa Barbara County, because they are serving, I think, at least 10 times the number of people. And they will be doing so for the foreseeable future. They have a plan to do so for at least the next 8 to 12 months. And so they're going to have to maintain services. Yeah, thank you. And then the next fundraiser show is actually June 25th, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And that is going to be for the Pacific Pride Foundation of Santa Barbara, which actually serves the largest area or the largest number of LGBTQ people between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And they have had to cancel all of their major fundraising events because they were based on hundreds of people gathering together. And June is Pride Month. And I've been wanting to throw a Pride themed show for months. So my entire lineup for that show are only LGBTQ and ally comedians. We have surprise guests. I actually have like a TikTok star coming because I asked, slid into his DMs. I said, I think you're hilarious. This is what I'm doing. And I would love it if you came through. And you found me on Instagram and said, you messaged me on TikTok. I'm messaging you here. I'll be there. So I can't tell you anymore because they're definitely a surprise guest, but they're amazing. And awesome. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
Oh, sorry.
That's and it's great.
Pay what you wish show. So you can, I've got tiers set up. You don't even have to think about it. $7, $15, $25. And then we have donations as well. So it's really just a good opportunity to get incredibly talented comedians right in your living room or in your farmhouse or bathhouse. I mean, I don't care where you watch it, really.
The bathhouse.
Yes, so go to your local bathhouse, check it out. That's awesome. This will all be in the show notes, so people, you'll be able to find it. Well, thank you, fans, by the way. Thank you. Oh, I forgot you guys were there listening, so hey there. But thank you, fans. If you guys have not, please subscribe, leave a review, tell a friend, and that's it. We love y'all. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk at you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye.